Tonight on Huckabee, Oklahoma State Superintendent Ryan Walters, TV legend Ricky Schroeder, former Trump attorney Jim Trusty, and Rock and Roll Hall of Famer Dave Mason. That's Trey Corley in the Music City Connection. And I'm your announcer, Keith Bilbrey. And now, here's Mike Huckabee!
Welcome, everyone. We are so very happy to have you with us. We have a fantastic show lined up. You're going to enjoy it, I promise you. Well, you are probably aware that Israel continues to root out the savage and evil forces of Hamas hiding in Gaza. The Hamas terrorists who murdered over 1,200 innocent Israeli civilians on October the 7th continue their cowardly evasion by hiding underneath hospitals, schools, and civilian homes. And while they shiver with fear in their hidey holes, they put the people of Gaza between them and Israeli soldiers. Hamas and their Iranian funders care not one whit about the so-called Palestinians. In fact, these uncivilized tools of Satan willfully hope that there will be massive deaths of children and civilians. That way they can pretend that Israel is to blame for the carnage that has ravaged Gaza. But Israel would have never gone into Gaza had they not been attacked in an unprovoked slaughter by Hamas, who inflicted the most disgusting and despicable death and destruction possible on the Jews who were waking up on the holy day of Shabbat. It's truly tragic that innocent children and non-combatants have been killed, both in Israel and in Gaza. But the blood of those killed is solely on the hands of the demonic and deranged thugs who went beyond murdering Jews to gleefully celebrating the mutilation of the bodies and even the babies, and then sending photos of their monstrous crimes to their families back in Gaza, who joined the celebration by coming over to Israeli villages to loot what was left of the homes of Jewish families who'd been slaughtered in cold blood. The further we get from the shock of the vicious attack and hostage-taking on October the 7th, the more the rest of the world wants to just forget what happened and then pressure Israel to walk away, stop the efforts to root out the last vestige of Hamas, and then sit back and wait for another attack. Let's never forget that Israel has tried to create a peaceful environment since its reestablishment in 1948. From day one, it's been attacked by its neighbors who sought repeatedly to annihilate Israel. In 1948, again in 1956, again in 1967, and in 1973, major wars were unleashed on Israel. Israel has been able to win every time it's been attacked, but not without the cost of the blood of its sons and daughters. Most of the Muslim-led nations of the Middle East have come to recognize that Israel is not interested in taking the land away from the Egyptians or the Emiratis, the Saudis or the Jordanians. They simply want the tiny sliver of land that was originally given directly by God to Abraham, which today represents 1/644th of the landmass controlled by Muslim-led countries. And when you hear Joe Biden or Anthony Blinken or sympathizers of the so-called Palestinians speak of a two-state solution, they might as well be talking the kind of gibberish that we're used to hearing from President Biden. But to be fair, Republican presidents have joined Democrat presidents in the nonsense of thinking that it's realistic, much less workable, to demand that Israel move their God-given borders so their enemies can get even closer and even share the same real estate. I mean, it's hard enough to get an Alabama fan to live next door to an Auburn fan, for heaven's sakes. Palestinian children are taught from the time they're 5 or 6 years old to hate Jews. They're taught that when they grow up. Killing a Jew is their highest calling of life. When a Palestinian kills a Jew, their families are given a pension for life. They even have streets named for them. When Israel gave away mass amounts of what little bit of land they had in order to achieve peace, they got no peace, but they did get more of their citizens murdered by terrorist attacks and suicide bombers. The so-called Palestinians have violated every single agreement they signed, whether the disastrous Oslo Accords of 1993 or their ill-advised complete pullout from Gaza in 2005, when 10,000 Israeli citizens were forcibly removed from their homes in order to give all of Gaza to the Palestinians, who then promptly voted to turn it over to the Iran-backed butchers of Hamas. Israel doesn't just have the right. Israel has the responsibility to root out the last living Hamas soldier. The tragedy of civilian death and suffering in Gaza will end only when the people there stop hiding and protecting Hamas, and when Hamas finally releases every last one of the hostages that it took on October the 7th, including some American citizens who are still being held hostage. But let's stop the insanity of calling for a two-state solution. And instead, why don't we insist on a biblical solution where Israel gets the land that it has had a title deed to for 3,500 years? And then the rest of the world should stand with Israel to create a safe and secure home for the Jewish people. Well, as I said, we've got a great show ahead, and some very special guests are here with us. Keith Bilbrey, I know you're anxious to tell all about it. I'm going to let you do it right now.
I can't wait. Coming up next, Oklahoma State Superintendent Ryan Walters fights the woke agenda in schools. Then later tonight, a rocking performance by Dave Mason. You're watching Huckabee. MikeHuckabee.com and sign up for his free newsletter and follow @GovMikeHuckabee on X.
Well, my next guest spent nearly a decade teaching AP history to high school students. For that, he deserves a medal. And now he's waging a war against woke curriculum in the state of Oklahoma. Please welcome the Oklahoma State Superintendent of Public Instruction. Give him a big hand. He deserves it. Ryan Walters. Great having you here, Ryan.
Thank you for having me.
Those years teaching high school history must have been a challenge. And I was saying, you know, you deserve a medal for that. But I think anybody that walks into a junior high or high school these days, really, they're facing tough times. But in your role as superintendent of education, you believe history is pretty important for students to have a little of that in the course of their education?
Yes, sir. You know, my background as a history teacher, you know, one of the things that we dug into was what made America exceptional. It was those Judeo-Christian values. It was the understanding of history. Our founders understood what made other countries successful and what didn't. But so much of what you see in schools today isn't a conversation about American greatness. It is trying to make kids feel bad about America, apologize for America. And what we've got to do is we've got to get kids back on track by really focusing in on those core principles and showing them, look, America can be that great country again, but you got to understand what made us great in the first place. You've got to understand the founders. And it's one of the most inspiring stories you can have is what happened to America? How did we become such a great country?
And how wonderful it is that when you're putting a focus on teaching the positive of American history and encouraging people to focus on things like math and science and the basics, you're getting so much love from the teachers' union in Oklahoma, aren't you? And from all the people at the New York Times and MSNBC, and they're praising you for these wonderful things you're doing. Isn't that right?
You know, it's pretty incredible, Governor. I was called by NBC a culture warrior, the most divisive man in Oklahoma. And why? Why do they say those things about me? because I've said we've got to get back to the basics. We don't want pornography in our kids' classrooms. We don't want gender ideology. We want math. We want reading. We want to focus on history. I don't want teachers' unions in charge of schools. I want parents in charge of their kids' education.
What a novel idea. What a novel idea that parents would raise their own children.
And we know God, our Creator, gave kids to parents, not to government, not to a school building, but to parents. Parents have to drive a kid's education. So we've continued in the state of Oklahoma to ensure that we don't have woke ideology in the classroom. We're going to bring prayer back to the classroom. We're going to bring...
Yeah, then you'll really be popular over on the West Coast and the East Coast, right?
You know, and it's amazing. I sat down with a reporter from D.C. not too long ago, and they said, you know, you talk about God and you talk about prayer. Where do you get these things from? And I said, you just got to come down to Oklahoma, go to any diner in the state, and this is what it means to be a Christian and be a true believer. Yeah. This isn't a novel concept, but I'm telling you, you know, D.C. has gotten so far out of whack with our nation's values and what really makes this country great.
I'm a big fan of your governor, Kevin Stitt, who's been on our show. I think he's probably the second best governor in America. There's another one that I'm a little familiar with that I'm a little prejudiced, but I think she's great. But you are fortunate to have a governor that is standing behind you in the efforts to get Oklahoma schools back on track to where it's all about educating, not indoctrinating students.
That's right. You know, Governor Stitt in Oklahoma and Governor Huckabee Sanders in Arkansas are leading the charge here on education. And so for me to have a governor who is truly believes in this, believes in school choice, we've been able to get universal school choice done. We've been able to talk about things like bringing the Ten Commandments in the classroom. We want our kids to understand where Western civilization began, where those laws began. And, you know, this is so important to what we've seen is, frankly, since the 1960s, we've seen what I call state-sponsored atheism. The Supreme Court came in and said, no prayer. Christians, we don't want you exercising your religious faith in school. We have got to get that back on track. I mean, now you're more protected, you know, giving your preferred pronouns in a school than saying a prayer. I mean, that's outrageous.
It is outrageous. I mean, what you just said, I think, sums it up. Because we're supposed to salute this flag of political correctness and wokeism that because somebody dreamed it up in the last few years, that it's got to be right. And there's a phrase that I hate, Ryan, when people say, oh, you need to be on the right side of history. I'm thinking, you know, there's not much history of this far left stuff. There just isn't. And what little there is, it's been disastrous. It's resulted in the collapse of governments and countries and cultures and civilizations. I kind of like to think that the Judeo-Christian foundation upon which we were built is the right side of history.
There's no doubt, Governor. And that's where you've seen the leftists, the teachers' unions, take our history out of schools. You're lying to kids if you're not talking about the Judeo-Christian values the nation was founded on. Yeah. How can we ever get back on track as a country if our kids don't know that? We've seen what's happened in the Biden administration. They've been, you know, pushing this ideology, pushing critical race theory, pushing all these concepts on kids. They're not concerned about reading scores. They're not concerned with an understanding of American history. But it's to drive division. It's to create hate in the country and undermine the family and society. Well, the thing I tell my staff every day is we've got to remember, we work for the families. We want to do everything we can to put the families as close-knit as possible, as engaged in their kids' lives, and to understand the Christian values this nation was founded on, because that is our history. You are lying to young people if you're not telling them that.
You know, there are people who say, yeah, but you guys don't like teachers, you don't respect schools. Oklahoma has just put proposals out that would give teachers the highest, most outrageous bonus for coming to Oklahoma and teach. I mean, I'm looking at this and I'm saying, the teachers in Oklahoma ought to love you guys. So what is it that the unions want other, I mean, yeah, my goodness, you're giving them record levels of salary and bonuses.
So listen to this. It's always been fascinating to me that the teachers' unions pretend like the free market doesn't work inside a school. Well, that's ridiculous. The free market works everywhere. So we came in and said, we're going to give $50,000 signing bonuses for teachers to come be a teacher. We want to give teachers a path to make $100,000 if they're a great teacher. But, you know, we have been very upfront. We want teachers with conservative, traditional values to be working with our kids. And we've had a record number of teachers come to the state of Oklahoma, come back to the profession. We also told them we're going to get discipline under control. and the teachers' unions will not run your school. And we have seen teachers respond. We've seen parents respond. We've seen people moving to the state of Oklahoma in record numbers, and we're very excited. We are laying out a path. This is what you can do in education. You know, and I'm so excited to see, you know, President Trump talking about abolishing the Department of Education. Yeah. I'm 100% on board with that. That Department of Education has pushed these things into our states and into our schools.
I think it's important for us to give really a spotlight on what you're doing in Oklahoma and hope that other states will do it. Ryan, thank you for being here. Most of all, thank you for just having the courage and backbone to stand up against the pressure and say, we work for our people and we're going to do what's best for them. I think you're going to want to keep up with Ryan Walters and the work that he's doing for the state of Oklahoma and their education system. Here's how you can do it. Go to our website, Huckabee.tv. You can learn more about what Ryan is doing in the fight to protect education in the wonderful state of Oklahoma. Right now, Keith Bilbrey, he's going to school us on what we have coming up next in the show. Keith?
Well, after the break, TV legend Ricky Schroeder is here to talk about the Real American Heroes Foundation. Then later, Trump attorney Jim Trusty discusses the Fulton County case against Trump. Right here on Huckabee.
Welcome back. You know, we get lots of questions in our inbox, and here's the question. What song did the band play tonight? Now, I recognize that song, but I can't remember the name. We hear it all the time. Well, guess what? Trey is going to do something special for all of you, because these people don't have to guess what songs that Trey and the band are playing anymore. If you go to Huckabee.tv and click on Trey Corley and the Music City Connection, we'll tell you what the songs are. Now, in TV language, we call this the bump music, and it's all on the website for you. So make a game of it. Guess the song, then go to the website to see if you're right. I'm right 99% of the time. See if you're that good. And by the way, in case you didn't know that song that they just played as we were coming in, it's the song It's Too Late by the great Carole King, who just celebrated her 82nd birthday this month. Hard to believe that, but she's still making music. Happy birthday, Carole King. And right now, let's give this great band, Trey Corley, the Music City Connection, a big round of applause. Ricky Schroeder won the hearts of Americans in 1979 with his critically acclaimed role in The Champ, which he starred with Oscar winner Jon Voight. He's been one of America's favorite TV stars from his days on the classic sitcom Silver Spoons in the 80s. Then he grew into roles on hits like NYPD Blue and one of my favorites, Lonesome Dove. He became a busy producer, writer, and director. His latest projects are the Real American Heroes Foundation, which creates films and TV shows telling true stories of our veterans, first responders, and Gold Star families. Please give a warm welcome to Ricky Schroeder. All right, before we get into the focus of the interview, there's a scene that you did in Lonesome Dove that may be the most disturbing scene I've ever seen in the movie. It's when you and your role as Newt were eaten up by a gazillion snakes in the river.
Yeah.
That still haunts me. I just want you to know. I don't know what they did, how much they paid you to do that scene, and if those snakes, I'm sure they weren't totally real.
No, they weren't.
Okay.
They were rubber.
Yeah. Even if they were rubber, I wouldn't have done what you did. I just don't believe in it. It's such an honor to have you here.
I'm glad to be here. What a great audience. Thank you for having me.
Well, you've had a storied career, both in front and behind the camera, but you're doing some things now that I think are just exceptional. And one of them is focusing on a group you've created, the Council on pornography reform, which, yes. You know, I'm thinking, wow, that's a tough calling, because a lot of people would probably say, oh, there he goes. He's trying to tell us what we can and can't see. But tell us, what motivated you to believe this is an important topic to take on?
So Council on Pornography Reform came out of Real American Heroes Foundation, which I started, which is a 501c3 nonprofit. And our mission is to tell stories of first responders and Gold Star families and people that wear the uniform. But I look at the perversion that has permeated our culture. Starting when I was 9 years old, you know, I saw my first video of pornography when I was 9 years old. Mm. And it's something that I've seen now for 45 years pushed into our culture when it never should have been. You know, I remember when the milk store first started showing girly magazines behind the cash register, and then they moved them into the aisles, and then they moved them into our homes and our phones using the First Amendment. And so the First Amendment was freedom of speech, and it was written by our forefathers prior to the invention of the camera.
Yeah.
If you think about when the camera was invented about 150 years ago, you can now capture pictures of perversion and then distribute them to people. Prior to that, you had to engage or witness perversion. But once they had a camera, they could start pushing it to us. And I see a real problem with our society because of 40 years of pornography pushed into our culture. And they used the First Amendment when it never applied. The First Amendment. The First Amendment is for speech. It had nothing to do with photographs. Mm-hmm. And so we created a documentary series we're producing now called Erotic Erosion that looks at the deleterious effects of pornography for 45 years.
And that's something I think that a lot of people would say, well, what harm is it? But there is harm, and that's what you've tried to help people to understand.
Yeah, there's a lot of harm, and there's things we can do about it. There's things that just because it's been this way doesn't mean it has to stay this way. When adult content first came out on the internet, it was all in the .xxx URL, and so you could actually block it at a home router. But they closed down the .xxx URL, and they pushed all adult content into the .com retail world. So one of our goals at the Council on Porn Reform is to push adult content back into the .xxx URL and get it out of our .com world. Another goal.
That would be a worthy thing, for sure.
Another goal is we want an off switch, Governor. Hmm. We want an off switch. Americans like choice. And why, if you pay the bill to AT&T and Verizon, why can't you have the choice to have adult content turned off to your phone? You can. They have the technology now. They can shut off pornography per zip code if they want. And so we're looking at a county in Colorado, for example, that's interested in becoming the first pornography-free dry county.
Wow.
And alcohol dry, pornography dry. Because the First Amendment was never intended to push pornography into our home.
You have such an extraordinary platform, a Hollywood personality that everyone knows, and you're using your voice and your platform to talk about ways to help our veterans and tell their stories, and to help families be able to fight against this destructive disease of pornography. Ricky, I don't even know what to say other than, God bless you, my brother. Thank you, my friend, for being a courageous person and saying, we won't just sit back and let it happen without a fight. What a great thing. And let me just say to our audience, I hope you'll follow Ricky Schroeder online. Join with him in the efforts that he's about. Learn more about the Real American Heroes Foundation. You can also find out more about the Council on Pornography Reform. If you go to Huckabee.tv, we will connect you to the organizations that Ricky is so courageously creating and working with. And I hope that a lot of Americans will be his partner. Right now, speaking of heroes, the real American hero of announcers, Keith Bilbrey, he's standing by, and he's got one goal. That's to tell us what's on the show next.
Whoa.
Jim Trusty joined us next to discuss the Fulton County case against Trump. Then the very funny Fred Klip performs Don't Go Away. We'll be right back. a part of our live studio audience. Go to Huckabee.tv and click on free tickets.
Welcome back. My next guest is a former attorney to President Donald Trump. He spent 28 years as a prosecutor, including at the Department of Justice. He served in the criminal division, where he specialized in the prosecution of RICO cases. You've heard a lot about those lately. Well, I want you to give a big welcome to a wonderful legal mind and a dear friend, Jim Trusty. Jim, great to have you here.
Thank you.
This has been kind of a crazy week. We've had the drama going on in Georgia with Fani Willis, the prosecutor who's going after Trump. And it's been a bigger drama than anything she accused Trump of. Give us a quick sort of chef's tour of what's happening in Georgia and why that matters to the rest of America.
Yeah, well, I mean, the Georgia prosecution has, I think, fundamentally bad origins, which is when you have any prosecutor, whether they're federal, state, city prosecutor, if they announce they want to go after somebody as part of their political strategy to be in office, that's a bad sign. That's an unethical thing right from the get-go. And the Georgia case has been just a comedy of errors when you think about it. Remember, we had the grand jury foreperson go out on a media tour, and everyone just kind of looked and said, that's what a grand jury is? You know, this is horrific. They had the clerk's office leak the indictment and then make up a story about how they didn't leak the indictment. And now we have these personal foibles that are actually much more legally troubling than just that, you know, dominating what's happening down in Georgia. So I watched it very carefully, partly because I was in law enforcement for so long, and I loved being a prosecutor, state and federal, and also because it's so important to this country. You know, we're getting to a point where law enforcement, lawfare has become this weaponized technique for those that will seek power at all costs, and somebody's got to stand up to it.
Well, and I think it's important. I mean, when I'm looking at what she's done, she hires her boyfriend, a married guy. They end up in a relationship. She pays him $700,000 to be the special prosecutor. He's never prosecuted the case like this, never been involved in anything. They go and take vacations together in the most wonderful Caribbean locations and then claim that, well, he reimbursed her, but all in cash. Of which I'm sure she reported all of that to the IRS. I mean, this thing just stinks to high heaven.
Yeah, you know, one little nugget of her testimony during this hearing about this conflict of interest, they said, isn't it true you had a $4,600 tax lien to the IRS? And why didn't you use any of this mysterious cash to pay that off? And she got all offended and kind of threw down the victim card over and over again. And again, you don't have to be a lawyer to kind of draw your own conclusions about credibility, but the story doesn't really hang together. And it's really, when you look at it from a broader perspective, it's a story of arrogance bringing down people that think the ends justify the means. They're comfortable wielding power gracelessly because they know better than the rest of us. They know the targets need to be brought down. And in that mode, they become sloppy and do things that are outrageous, like Fani Willis apparently did.
In New York, we had a similar case where Letitia James, the attorney general, vowed in her campaign, I'm going after Trump. I'm going to get Trump. And she spent her entire time not fighting crime in New York, but going after him. And this week, a judge decided that he's going to have to put up about $350 million because he paid the banks back. I mean, I scratch my head on this one, Jim. Yeah. It's hard to understand what was the crime, who was the victim.
Right. Well, there was no victim. That's the starting point. You know, and the Southern District of New York, federal prosecutors, they passed this thing up. They looked at it and they said, even as aggressive as we are about Donald Trump, we're not touching this thing.
Yeah.
Well, enter a person who campaigned unethically on the notion that we will target somebody and then we'll just find the crime to fit. And so it's a civil case. It's not a criminal case, but obviously a devastating potential case. And again, you know, I think anyone that knows anything about loan applications, you know, when you have a defense witness in that civil trial who says, I'm from a big multinational bank, and by the way, I could care less what he puts in his estimates. We're always going to do our due diligence. Mm-hmm. And by the way, he was a fantastic customer who never defaulted. Like, at least by that point, it should have been the end of the story.
Yeah.
But we have, you know, a New York bench that kind of reminds me of Washington, D.C. It's not a particularly sympathetic bench. Letitia James politicized the heck out of this thing and has gone. Again, the common denominator for all these cases, even the Jack Smith federal ones, is creativity by prosecutors. And that should be a bad word when you're talking about something so important to a nation as whether a former president gets prosecuted or whether a leading presidential candidate gets prosecuted. We should see things that are regular and transparent, not creative. And what we're getting across the board is creative prosecution.
Jim, you spent 28 years in the justice system as a prosecutor. When you see these kind of things, whether it's the case where they raid his home in Mar-a-Lago, the Georgia case, the New York case, the D.C. stuff with Jack Smith, do you ever look back on your career and say, that never would have happened during the time that I was at the DOJ? We didn't do stuff like that. Does it make you ashamed of what they're doing today?
Yeah. I got a text from an old friend of mine who's really on the other side of the aisle politically,
yeah,
but was a high-level official at DOJ. And just out of the blue, when we were both taking in all of this nonsense from New York to Georgia, he said, the Department of Justice is going to take decades to recover.
Mm.
And this is a guy who's not naturally sympathetic to President Trump. And he's right. I mean, this is something where we have developed a culture of lawfare where they will use any weapon and they'll say, because it's him. You know, they'll acknowledge it's because it's him. They're doing things differently. The Mar-a-Lago raid never should have happened. It's not even a criminal event when you talk about an ex-president having records. It happens all the time. But for Donald Trump, it became weaponized. It became a singular treatment where they criminalized something that wasn't criminal. And so we're seeing that pattern of behavior across the board. And I really think it's the Rubicon. I think if our country allows prosecutors to be unchecked by conscience, to be unchecked by precedent, but to be creative at the expense of making a political point, we're in a different world.
In the final 10 seconds we got, will it get fixed? Can it be fixed?
Yeah, well, that's a question of faith, I think. You're probably better than I at that. That may not be a question of law. Look, I have hopes that even though the Supreme Court is not in love with the notion of deciding elections by their decisions, that they're going to wade in on some of these issues like presidential immunity, the Presidential Records Act, maybe some of these other areas where they can truncate this. They certainly should weigh in on the ballot elimination litigation we've been seeing around the country, and I think they will. So I think there's a chance, but 2024, I mean, you know, it's going to be a heck of a year is the short version of that.
Jim, you're one of the favorite people that I get to see on TV. When you come on, I say, I want to hear what Jim says, because you're one of the most articulate voices of the justice world. And we're so delighted that you came to be with us tonight. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Absolutely.
What a pleasure having you. But Jim Trusty isn't just sitting on his hands these days. Not at all. So make a point to follow him in the work that he's doing to defend against unfair treatment by the government. We've got all the information on Jim Trusty at our website, Huckabee.tv. Right now, Keith Bilbrey is going to tell us what else we have planned for tonight. You're going to want to know.
Well, comedian Fred Flynn is up next. You don't want to miss it. Then founding member of the band Traffic, Dave Mason, performs. That's coming up on Huckabee. Huckabee.tv and get your very own made in the USA Huckabee mugs, t-shirts, and more.
Well, when you're one of 10 kids, I mean, you got to do something drastic to get attention. So Fred Klett learned to be very, very funny. His Drybar comedy special called One of Ten has over 65 million views. Yeah, you heard me right, 65 million. He's open for stars like Jay Leno, Ricky Skaggs. He performs his hilarious clean comedy on top cruise lines all over the world. We're so glad to have him back. Please welcome for his second appearance on our show, Fred Klett.
Thank you. Thank you. It's nice to be back. Please stop. I want a bonding type question. This should bring us all together regardless of where we're from. Does anyone here come from a family? I got 8 brothers and 1 sister. I grew up in a family of 10 kids. A large family, you have to adapt to survive, parents included. My dad adapted. He learned how to have fun with us. Used to love taking us to the store. He'd only say one thing, spread out. They can't watch all of us. Now, most kids, their favorite holiday is Christmas. Not when you're from a large family, because it might not be your turn to get a present that year. A large family, your favorite holiday is Halloween, because it is incentive-based. If you hustle, you can stock up for the year. Halloween comes around, all you know is you're going to run for as hard as you can, as long as you can. A lot of kids try to tell you, oh, Halloween ends at 10 p.m. Wrong. Halloween ends when people quit answering the door. And most kids, they're just concerned about what they're going to be for Halloween. You ask a kid from a large family, what are you going to be? I'm going to be as fast as I can. You're going to wear a costume would slow me down. And you hate it when you get to that nice lady's house, that nice lady that just wants to talk Halloween night, and she wants to have a conversation. And what are you supposed to be? I do not have time for this. Put the candy in the bag. I had one brother, he wouldn't even talk to people. Halloween night, they try to talk to him. He'd just look at him and go, I've seen grown men just back away, just throw candy at him, maybe he'll leave. I guess what I'm trying to say to you is that you grow up in a large family, you're more creative than other kids because you don't have as many toys and stuff, and that kind of inspires that creativity. And as a result, you learn how to have fun where a lot of other kids don't. And I'll give you an example of that. We loved church when we were growing up. Loved it, church. We loved church. Absolutely loved it. Church. Loved it. Only place we knew of that you could go to sit down, and this really happens. They pass a bowl full of money down your aisle. We didn't even have to say trick or treat. One Sunday, my dad looked and saw what we were doing. He looked like a guy without a microphone. And as a child, when you see your dad doing that, you realize he's helpless. You do what comes natural for a kid. But I've got a lot of younger brothers and a younger sister. Younger brothers and sisters, they're not right. They're mentally off. They think goofy. Their whole goal is to get you to snap and get you in trouble. I had one younger brother in particular who was really good at getting on your skin no matter when you looked at him. No matter when you looked at him, all he would ever do was this. They're not right. They're mentally... You ever have a younger brother or sister just walk up and touch you? They just want to touch you. And you're thinking, well, I can ignore that. But after about an hour, it starts to get you. And just before you're ready to snap, they change weapons. They go from the touch to the almost touch. The almost touch is worse than a touch. They just put it out there till you pick it up with your vision. Once you spot it, you can't look at anything but. Then they come in for the almost touch. And that's when you snap. You try so hard not to, but it's like your arm has a life of its own. Whack! Now my brother's crying. I'm looking around for a stick, hoping someone else hit him at the same time. I don't want to go down for this by myself. He goes running off to our dad. Fred hit me. Well, what'd you do to him? I didn't do nothing. Then my dad from the other room, Fred, get in here. Why'd you hit him? Well, he almost touched me. And as soon as you say it, you know you're in trouble. Now my younger brother's standing behind my dad. Now, everyone would always ask my parents, what was it like raising 10 kids? And they always said there were so many stories that they could choose from. Like one time I got together with all my brothers and we pooled our money and we ordered a monkey out of the back of a magazine. I'll never forget the date, August 22nd. My dad was sitting on the front porch. UPS truck pulls into the driveway. Driver gets out with the small box, walks up to my dad and says, sir, here's the monkey that you ordered. My dad looked at my mom and said, Joanne, line them up. Hey, thanks a whole lot, everybody. Thank you.
That's great, Fred.
No, you bet. Thank you.
Oh, man, I can believe that whole thing of line them up. Hey, if you want to see Fred Klett's booking information, tour schedule,
Invite him to your community or learn more about his hilarious clean comedy, including his DVD and dry bar special called One of Ten. It's simple. Visit Huckabee.tv. Speaking of funny stuff, Keith Bilbrey. He is a funny guy sometimes. He's one of a kind, and he's going to tell us what's coming up next on the show.
Well, stay right where you are. Dave Mason performs next. Next week for founder of the U.S. Israel Education Association, Heather Johnston, and the family harmonies of William Lee Golden and the Golden.
I've been looking forward to this for a long time because tonight's musical guest is a legendary singer, guitar player, songwriter. He has recorded with everyone, and I mean everyone. Jimi Hendrix, Eric Clapton, George Harrison, Fleetwood Mac. He's a rock and roll Hall of Fame inductee, co-founder of the iconic group Traffic, and creator of timeless hits like Feeling All Right and We Just Disagree. He recently released a smoking new version of the Traffic classic Dear Mr. Fantasy with blues guitarist Joe Bonamassa, and he's launching a national tour this year called Traffic Jam. Please give a big welcome to one of the best, Dave Mason. Dave, great having you. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm just blown away. Keith and I, both old radio guys, and when we found out you were coming to be on the show, I mean, we were truly amped, and I mean in a great way.
Bill, thank you.
You played with Jimi Hendrix.
I did.
On All Along the Watchtower. On Electric Ladyland, the album.
I played acoustic guitar on All Along the Watchtower and sang on Crosstown Traffic, actually.
I mean, some phenomenal music. What was he like as a guitar player playing with him? Was he just off in his own space, or?
I never saw him without a guitar.
Yeah.
We hung out quite a few times. There's a lot of great guitar players. A lot of great guitar players. There are, in my opinion, there is no more Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah.
I mean, he was so innovative, especially in the studio.
You're considered one of the great guitar players of all time, and that's why you're in the Hall of Fame.
I sort of fumble around a little bit.
But you wrote songs when you were 19 years old that ended up getting covered by Joe Cocker and all kinds of people.
I wrote Feeling All Right when I was about, I think, well, actually 20, 21, and it's been everybody and their grandmother has done that song. Yeah. Every bar band has played it and still plays it.
As they should.
As they should. And it's been cut by about 50 major artists.
Yeah,
it just goes on and on, that song.
As a great guitar player, who are your favorites? Who are the ones that you like to listen to and say, those guys are really special?
Well, my kind of stuff is a little... I mean, Joe, obviously, Joe Bonamassa, because we just did this song together, is an awesome player. And a pretty darn good singer, too. One of my great guitar players that probably most people have probably never heard of is Manitas de Plata, who is probably very early Gypsy Kings. Hmm. from the Camargue. Incredible flamenco guitar.
You have a lot of dates with the Traffic Jam concert tour that you're doing. And I read that it's going to be a little different. It's not all about the staging, the theatrics. What's going to be different about Traffic Jam? Because it sounds like the kind of concert I'd like to go to.
Well, there's no dancing girls and there's no smoke machines. We're just straight up great band. One of the great things that I have is that just joined the band at the end of last year is Mark Stein, lead singer with the Vanilla Fudge. And then I throw in a couple of songs that I sang on, like I'm a Man.
Yeah.
Spencer Davis, which I was on the original record. So we throw things like that and mix it up a little bit.
Dave, I'm honored you're here. I'm thrilled. And even more so that you're going to play some music with us here in a moment with Trey and the band. And I got to tell you, Keith, I get to play with Dave Mason tonight, joining the Music Immortals by playing with this incredible...
I get to play with Mike Huckabee.
Yeah, that's no big deal. But please tell our viewers how they can get more of the music of the one and only Dave Mason.
For links to all his music, including the new version of Dear Mr. Fantasy with Joe Benamassa, and tickets and tour dates for the Traffic Jam Tour, visit Huckabee.tv. Now, performing Only You and I Know with Trey Corley and the Music City Connection and a very nervous Mike Huckabee on bass, here's Dave Mason!